This is an ABC podcast.
Some things are just not meant to be.
Certainly this year, I think, is probably the closest we've had to a natural mating. You know, Wang Wang has been a little bit more dominant. He's certainly assuming the position.
Zookeepers have tried various ways to convince Wong Wong and Fu Ni to mate, even using panda porn.
Close but no cigar. So, once again, the zoo's hopes for the pitter-patter of little panda paws lie with artificial insemination.
OK, so why can't Wang Wang bang? I have never, ever come up with a more perfect tagline. But no, it's spelt Wang Wang, but it said Wong Wong. So that doesn't really work, does it?
It certainly doesn't.
Don't rub it in. Chad Criddle, acting assistant curator for carnivores and ungulates at Adelaide Zoo. Okay, so, Wong Wong. What's wrong with his schlong? It's the big, or maybe not so big, questions here on What the Duck. I'm Dr. Anne Jones, and let's head to the zoo.
Here at Adelaide Zoo, we're lucky enough to be Australia's panda home and home to one of only two pairs of pandas that are in the Southern Hemisphere now.
That's Chad, who looks after Wong Wong and Fu Ni.
They came to Adelaide Zoo in 2009. They're two of our favourite residents here at Adelaide, Wong Wong and Fu Ni.
These pandas might be living here, but they must be on some sort of weird bridging visa situation because every single panda in the world is owned by the Chinese government. They sort of rent them out to international zoos like Adelaide.
Actually, this is the first time I see the morning routine for the panda. Yeah.
This is Li Jung. He's from the Chinese consulate in Adelaide.
Yeah, I think the Oma is having its breakfast. It's a fresh bamboo. It's very, very cute and make me very more peaceful. Yeah, especially in this lovely morning. Yeah. The meaning of the panda, like lovely and friendly, and like a friend.
And he's not the only fan of pandas.
The crowd favourites still causing pandemonium.
China retains ownership of all pandas worldwide.
The panda is a symbol of conservation.
It's really exciting because we can see them here over and over again, and we don't have to like go to China to see them.
The giant panda is a national treasure of China, and it's loved by people all over the world. It has also become a window and a link for the Australian people to understand China and the Chinese culture. These two lovely giant pandas played very meaningful roles in promoting the friendship between these two countries and two peoples.
I mean, no pressure. Just the whole China-Australia relationship resting on your furry shoulders. It doesn't come cheap, this symbol of friendship. Pandas are generally loaned out for a 10-year period at the cost of $1 million annually. And if the pandas manage to have a baby while on foreign soil, there'll be a charge for that too. $400,000 for the privilege. And the cub, it's still owned by China. Well, luckily, actually scratch that. Unluckily, that's something that the Adelaide Zoo hasn't had to think about because for some reason, Wong Wong and Fu Ni have never been able to have a cub.
Panda reproduction is incredibly complex, and so something that we're really happy about is the fact that our two pandas are really good at being pandas. They do exactly what they need to do the whole time. Pandas are just a really, really difficult species, and there's a number of biological factors around that that contribute to that.
This is What the Duck. I'm going to need some more gritty details than that, Chad. So I've called up Megan Martin-Wintle, who's a
conservation biologist with PDX Wildlife. I'm also the director and co-founder of the nonprofit.
And she's an expert in
conservation breeding programs, increase endangered species and reproduction.
And this means she can tell us all about how panda sex happens in the wild, which these days is in the mountains of southwest China in forests where they live alone and quietly, at least for most of the year.
basically, the female starts to go into oestrus and she'll start to secrete like pheromones and she'll start marking her territories. They start calling a lot more. Theoretically, that call can go through the bamboo and, you know, draw males to them.
Okay, competition time. What do you think a majestic giant panda call sounds like? If you answered a distant goat sneezing, yeah, you win a car. Oh, bless you.
But they'll also roll in the water, which we think takes their chemicals downstream to males as well. And they'll mark trees, you know, so they do these, what we kind of think a little bit of more as male behaviors, where they go up against a tree and sort of scent mark their butt in the area against the tree. And they'll do that all around for about 2 to 3 weeks prior to actually peaking in oestrus.
Yeah, girl, she's absolutely putting it out into the universe, butt marking, calling, bathing in the mountain streams. She is ready. And she's on a deadline because there's just one 12-hour period once a year where it's possible for her egg to be fertilized.
There'll be anywhere from 3 to 5 males, I think, is like the largest group, will come in, and then just the female climbs to the top of the tree. And they just fight it out at the bottom. And whoever wins the male-male competition wins the breeding rights to the female.
And if you're wondering what a panda fight looks like, it's apparently a fair bit of bleating and a bit of jostling. Most of the time, anyway. Completely doable. Of course, it goes without saying that at all times, it is unwise for a human to wrestle a 150-kilogram teddy bear with an erection.
So she'll climb down to the bottom of the tree, and then they'll mate and everyone will be happy and then go on their way after. Female pandas, they just are like, do it, and then they're done with the male. bye-bye, and even worse than bye-bye, like, you know, chasing them aggressively away, like, I am finished with you. So they'll do that in conservation breeding programs too, where it's like, separate them immediately, because the female usually does not tolerate the male hanging out in her space after the actual deed is done.
Right, so there is no post-coital afterglow for pandas then. So the actual act of copulation, and I don't want to get too far into panda porn sort of area, yeah. But... it, like, how does it all happen? And is it quick?
I have actually seen the world record holder for panda breeding. Lulu is very famous. So yeah, they're fascinating because they'll get together and then the male and female will do this little vocalization dance sort of thing where, you know, she'll chirp a lot. So I call it the come hither call, like, and then he'll bleat. And it sounds like a goat bleating. And they'll do that kind of back and forth. Then the male, you know, go up to her and try to mount a little. And she'll put her tail up and go into lordosis like other animals. So they go into that sort of arched back position. And the female definitely has to be an active participant because a male's penis is very tiny.
Hey, size does not correlate with panda quality.
So the female actually has to like physically back in. They have to be in the perfect position, and the female has to back into him to achieve copulation, so actual penetration. And once that happens, it's kind of funny. We just published a paper on this a couple years ago, actually, that we started naming it the orgasm bleat because they let off this very high-pitched, like, bleeding sound once they're like mounted, that's like, and they hold it for minutes.
So we have these real sounds that Megan sent us. That one's Megan. But this one is a panda having sex. I'll have what she's having.
But the male will you know, be holding the female on the haunches and kind of doing what you think of when you see lions, like biting the nape of the neck and stuff like that. But he'll do this position that we call the rollback position. So he'll actually like roll the female back onto his lap and then just sit. And the longer, the theory is the longer they can hold on, the more chance of an actual fertilization event and a cub. And so the longest one I've ever seen was 28 minutes by this male Lulu, who breeds successfully with almost every female we put him in. So
what a stud. Yeah. Bless you. So that's how it happens if pandas are left to their own devices in the forest. But Wong Wong and Funi's story in Adelaide is a little bit different. Obviously, they were born in China and were transported over to Adelaide Zoo in 2009, which is actually ages ago now. Here's Chad Crittle, Zoo's SA panda wrangler.
At the time, they were quite young pandas. So Wong Wong is 17, Funi's 16 currently. And for pandas, their breeding cycle, it takes them a while to learn what's involved and build the skill as well to complete the cycle.
That's Gibbons in the background, not Orgasm Bleats, by the way.
So we've been attempting breeding here at Adelaide since not long after they first arrived, but on the understanding that for pandas it's a learning process for them. They're not instinctively ready to do all of those individual points of reproductive behaviour straight away. They have to learn and get better at them.
Okay, hang on a minute here. I feel like I'm jumping right into their sex lives and I don't even actually know them. Feels a bit rude. So what are Wong Wong and Funi actually like?
So Wong Wong, it's food. He loves his food and loves his training. So he does stand-ups, squats and crab walks to support his leg muscles to keep them fit so that he can do all the correct scent marking that he needs to do.
OMG, panda personal trainer is an actual job. Sign me up.
Try to avoid, you know, labelling and anthropomorphisms when I can, but if you could describe any animal as a goofball, Wong Wong would be that. And Funi, she likes her food very much on her terms. Funi is far more on her own terms, doing her own thing. For both of them, they bring immense amount of, yeah, joy to the people who get to work with them and the people who get to see them, because when a panda's doing the things that pandas are famous for, rolling around, which they genuinely do, and it's hilarious, climbing and just moving around their space, you know, being such beautiful animals, it's fantastic.
Do you have a favourite Wong Wong moment?
Wong Wong draws a lot of attention when he has his bubble bath. So he loves the scented bubble bath.
I've seen video of that. Wong Wong is a big boy, and there's a huge water trough, like a big black bucket full of bubbles. And Wong Wong just walks straight over, gets in, and starts splish-sploshing around like a toddler.
People love watching him just enjoy his bubble bath.
What scent does he choose for his bubble bath?
Strawberry. That's his favourite scent out of the options.
Okay, strawberry bubble bath. Surely that would help him get in the mood.
Something that's really interesting about them is they start vocalising to each other a lot. Is the males start exploring, they're looking for scent marks. During that time, it actually builds their testosterone levels as they're moving around and exploring their environment. And one of the interesting things that results from that is their calls get longer. So the more testosterone in the male system, the bigger their vocal cords are and they're able to sustain a bleat for longer. And so it actually points out to a female that he's a reproductively really virile male.
And you've heard that?
Well, yeah, these guys, they call to each other all through the breeding season in the build-up to it, and he's got a pristine bleat. He has a great bleat, which is a very good sign that Wong Wong is a beautiful, big, mature male and does a very good job at doing those calls.
Who's ready to hear the sexiest possible big, mature male calls? And with that sort of irresistible bleating going on, do Wong Wong and Funi, you know? Well, apparently they have had a couple of goes, but there's been no luck on the baby panda front.
Yes, so if we do an artificial insemination procedure, it is Wong Wong sperm that is injected into Funi, and then they do the rest at that point in time.
But even with that technology on our side, panda breeding in captivity has a history of being really, really difficult.
Some international zoos just don't ever have success. The pair never breeds. And so they rely on artificial insemination very strongly.
And remember, there's one 12-hour period a year that the AI has a chance of working in tandem with the female cycle. So it's a very delicate operation. Speaking of which, okay, I've got a question. So is it someone's job then in zoos to give a hand job to a panda?
They do like, yeah, what they call electroejaculation, yeah, where they stimulate the prostate.
I didn't know that's how they did it.
Yeah, they're anesthetized, so it's not like what you would traditionally think of as a hand job, right? I'm not sure anyone would do that.
Right, so it is a whole medical
procedure.
Do you find that the rates of artificial insemination are adequate?
So when the vets know how to do it, they can be really high success rates. You know, the National Zoo almost has like 100% success of like getting a cub eventually.
Wow. So that's potentially good news for Funi and Wong Wong at Adelaide Zoo. Practice makes perfect. So has it been a successful season?
Funi is... she's doing what we would expect her to do at this time of year, as she's done every other year. And so we're just working with keepers and both of these animals, keeping them happy and fulfilled in where they need to be in their yearly cycles.
But if you're wondering why Chad sounds a bit, well, not quite the proud panda granddad that you'd think he would be, it's because he's been fooled before.
So for pandas, you know if you're successful or not at the minute pregnancy wraps up. That's when we find out. And so for pseudo-pregnancies, they can go through a pseudo-labour. So something that looks like a real labour for all markers, but then it's not.
Funi could be having a phantom pregnancy, and it's basically impossible to tell one way or the other.
You know, pandas have been a mystery, and we still don't have a great way of determining that they're actually pregnant. So we've looked at, you know, the typical markers of progesterone increasing, which is what, or LH or FSH.
These are the chemicals present in other pregnant mammals.
We've tried to look at all of those in the panda, and we can't find either the panda equivalent or what we would normally look for in other mammals. Most of the zoos know 2 or 3 weeks beforehand they actually have a baby or a cub gestating. Because they're so tiny, too, that you can't pick them up on ultrasound very well.
Right. And so she doesn't sort of become, you know, like, I don't know, like a bovine, like a cow can get really tubby when she's pregnant. They don't get like that at all. It's all quite contained within their fluffs.
Yeah. And they're so big compared to the, I mean, even when they're born, they're as big as a stick of butter. I think they hold the record for the largest discrepancy between, you know, mother and maternal birth. So they are a lot like the marsupials in that way, right?
Yeah.
Like the little, you'd think they'd have a pouch or something to carry around this like very undeveloped offspring that comes out.
So for our prospective parents in Adelaide, it's a wait and watch situation. The history of panda conservation has been complicated because of these breeding anomalies. And Megan Martin-Wintle started working in panda breeding facilities in China in about 2011.
Basically, the problem we were starting to have is that some individuals bred really, really well, and others just, we lost entirely the genetics of them.
Even when they were pairing pandas together, the outcomes were hit and miss.
It's kind of an unrealistic expectation to just have one of each sex. You are really putting those animals in the, like, last panda on earth type situation. And we know that there are people that we wouldn't breed with even if they were the last human on earth.
Yeah, almost all of them, actually, yeah.
Right, like a good percentage. So in the wild, it happens a lot different than what we've been asking them to do in captivity, which is potentially one of the reasons that we've had such a problem getting them to breed in captivity. So I started looking into the idea of providing just mate choice to the animals. So it's kind of funny that my entire scientific career has been like proving that Darwin and sexual selection like exists in conservation breeding, just like they are in the wild. So where basically I just took the female and gave her a dichotomous choice test, which means you put her in a center cage and two males that are genetically compatible, and then we just measure behaviors and decide which one she likes the most, and then she gets to breed with the one she likes the most.
I mean, it sounds silly, but it actually has been pretty revolutionary for captive panda breeding. You give the female the choice of who she wants to breed with.
And we've gotten this sort of down to an art where we now do what I like to like lovingly call like panda speed dating. So I explain the like two males on either side, but like we can actually, you know, if she's really not liking one, let's bring the third genetic choice in, let's bring the fourth. So we actually rank the males up to about six, the top six genetically recommended males for them. And then by the time we get to six, she's usually chosen one, or like the pair likes each other. Yeah, so we do that kind of thing.
I love it. And all going well after the speed dating, there's a little bit of bleating, an orgasm call, and then tiny baby pandas. Bless you. So even with all this really advanced technology, even with the bubble baths and the enrichment and all of the care possible in the world, sometimes we just cannot quite replicate nature. And in some situations, even when a pregnancy makes it all the way through in captivity, the mother rejects the cub.
We actually did show that the natural matings had the highest potential of having a cub, and then the mothers didn't reject that cub as much as the artificially inseminated. So, like, there was something about artificial insemination and having that sort of surprise baby that made the mothers have a higher likelihood of rejecting the cub. So, yeah, that was very fascinating to find. In my mind, I was like, wow, like, that's such a weird phenomenon that we have nowhere in nature. It's like an alien abduction, right? Like, the female is put under, they're fertilized, and then a couple months later you have a baby, and you have no, you know, background of a natural mating occurring sometimes at all, right?
You have reached the message bank of...
Oh, message from an Adelaide number.
Hi Anne, it's Chad from Adelaide Zoo. So this time round it was a pseudo-pregnancy. From what we can see, she's gone through the full hormonal picture of a pregnancy, but at the completion of it, she starts to go back to a normal cycle of behaviour. She's doing exactly what we'd like her to see, which is going back to feeding and building back to a non-breeding cycle. So she's doing everything we'd expect her to see and doing well. With pandas, we're continuing to learn every single time.
Those tricky bears, we don't really know what's going on with it, is the short answer. But females sometimes go through what appears to be, they'll start their nesting behavior, we have behavioral markers for animals that we believe are in pregnancy. It may just be more due to us not being able to detect an early pregnancy. Like, maybe they're doing those behaviors because, like, they do have a fetus, but then it miscarries or whatever. But man, I remember Scotland being so frustrated because every freaking year they were certain they were going to have a baby. And then by the end, they're just like, I'm convinced this female just knows that if she does these behaviors, she gets more food. So we'll see if that was their gut feeling.
Yeah, she wanted more buns.
Yep.
Same. What the Duck is an ABC Science production. I'm Anne Jones, and this program is produced by Patria Ladgrove and made on the lands of the Kaurna and Wadawurrung people. You heard sounds supplied by the Adelaide Zoo and Megan Martin-Wintle in this program. This is actually the last show of season two of What the Duck. We're going to take a break from the podcast just for a little while so that I can go off and shoot some more TV shows for you all to enjoy. The best way to stay in touch in the meantime is to actually follow or subscribe to the podcast in an app of your choice. Make sure you turn notifications on. And remember, there's a huge back catalogue now to listen to, which has this.
I use the example of parrots at a party.
And this.
And because I'd touched the mushrooms, I wondered if it was making me hallucinate. Its fur was glowing, brilliant, bluish white.
And even some of this.
Oh. And seriously, like jamming your hand in a door.
Talk to you soon, duckers. Bless you.
You've been listening to an ABC podcast. Discover more great ABC podcasts, live radio, and exclusives on the ABC Listen app.